Welcome to the Preservation Technology Podcast, the show that brings you the people and projects that are bringing innovation to preservation. I'm Kevin Ammons with the National Park Service's National Center for Preservation Technology and Training. Today we join Catherine Cooper as she speaks with David Rao and Matthew Marshall at the Florence Griswold Museum in Old Lyme, Connecticut. In this podcast, they talk about the inception and design of Miss Florence's palette trees and the new book highlighting the collection of over 200 artist palettes.
Miss Florence's artist trees came about in 2004. In 2002, we just had completed our new building, the Kriebel Gallery. And it was really a state-of-the-art, beautiful, modern space. And we were still trying to figure out how we were going to incorporate Christmas into that space. Christmas has always been important here because our namesake, Florence Griswold, was born on Christmas Day in 1850. We've always had a tradition of going kind of above and beyond during the holidays. But with the new building in that modern space, we really weren't sure what the best fit was. I kind of took a page out of the tree that I always see at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. They bring out this beautiful Baroque Christmas tree every year, and it becomes a thing that folks visit season after season. So I said, well, what could we do that would be something we could do over and over again, but it wouldn't get old? And that's when the spark came that because we spend so much time here giving out paints, palettes, you know, we have an on-plein air Sundays where we give visitors a palette with squirts of paint on it, and we give the school children small palettes. We handle a lot of these medium-sized palettes. And so that's when the idea came to us that we would give them out to the artists that we're familiar with in the area. Old Lyme is rich with creative painters, and we would give them a blank palette and ask them to paint on it in their signature style, and then give it back to the museum as kind of a donation. And we would put them on these different trees, you know, year after year. So the first year we started with 50, and that filled up a nice tree, but we had a lot of other decorations to put in between. You know, it just kept going and going. And, you know, now we have 212, and no one has asked us to stop yet. So there's more coming.
How do you select who paints a palette for Miss Griswold?
You know, it's a combination. The artists that were part of it originally, the first couple of years, was pretty obvious because there are folks that show in the area, live in the area, are involved in the museum in a creative way, one or another. So that list was pretty easy. But throughout the year, you know, sometimes staff members have a friend or they go to a gallery and they send me a link. People who see the tree become, you know, any artist that they know, all of a sudden they think it'd be perfect for that. You know, we give out my card and they send me a letter or a link. And I just ask to see some of their work, so I know the caliber that they're at. It's a sliding scale. I mean, some of them are famous artists that would be difficult to get, that we're really thrilled of. Others are just really friends of the museum that it's just really nice to have an object by them on the tree. It's not a juried thing. It's kind of a gut feeling, but it's also a yes, yes, good kind of thing.
And what guidelines do you give them?
I send them a letter saying, thank you so much for being willing to donate. You know, their paintings are very valuable. You know, even though it's a smallish size, you know, in the open market, some of them could get a lot of money for those. So I always thank them for their time and enthusiasm way in advance. We ask that they paint on the palette that we give them, or if they need a surrogate, keep the shape and the size for the most part the same. So we have had a couple ceramic artists that couldn't make ceramics with the wooden palette, so they made ceramic versions of the palette, but they match the size the same. And then we just say, because this kind of grows out of the history of artists coming to the Old Lyme Art Colony, painting on the doors and walls of Miss Florence's house, so that the palettes are kind of an extension of artists, living contemporary artists, doing something for the museum and leaving it behind. So we ask them maybe something that kind of represents them and their style, but also is appropriate to give Miss Florence for a gift. Some of them want to know if it has to be Christmassy. And I say, no, it's really open. It can be whatever you want, as long as it's kind of appropriate for Miss Florence and to hang on a public tree. I mean, the very first year, somebody asked me if they could do something pornographic. And I said, well, do you make pornographic art? And they said, no. I just wanted to know what the limits were. I'm like, well, don't do that. I said, something that's appropriate for Miss Florence that'll hang nicely on the tree.
So you mentioned that the palettes are reminiscent of the panels in the dining room. Could you speak to that?
So Florence Griswold is a sea captain's daughter. Mm-hmm. And so the Griswold house is an 1818 house that the captain bought for his young family and raised three daughters and one son. But when Miss Florence was 49 years old, she was alone in the world. The rest of her family had either passed on or gone away. She was not married and had no children. And so one of the only respectable things for her to do as a Victorian woman would be to run a boarding house out of her house. But as luck would have it, in 1899, an artist from New York City, Henry Ward Ranger, stopped by looking for a place to bring his fellow artists the following summer. Mm-hmm. And true to his word, in 1900, they showed up with a merry band of artists and they moved into her house and took over most of the public spaces. But they were wanting to make it look as much like an art colony house as they were experiencing in other places, Europe and other places in the U.S. And so they asked her permission to paint on the doors of her house. And when the doors ran out, they painted on wooden panels that they installed in the dining room. And so from the early on, it was a museum, a house filled with objects and art to look at. And even though when Florence died and everything was sold off, all of her belongings, the doors and painted panels always stayed in situ. So they really are the jewels of the crown. And then the palette just kind of updates that with temporary artists who still want to participate with the museum in this kind of artistic and creative way that's, you know, long-lasting and ongoing. We probably need to tell the artists in the future that some of the materials need to be long-lasting, because we've gotten some that are 3D, stuff is a little ephemeral. So I'll have to remind them that we want it to last as long as possible so that their supply should be as durable as possible. You know, some folks have like ribbons attached to theirs and those are long-lasting, but another artist decided to use dried flowers. Okay. And so those, you know, although we handle everything as if it's a museum object, you know, those things after time, you know, will slowly deteriorate. It'd be nice to have things that are going to last a little bit longer than dried flowers, but we'll see what we can do and try to keep it as the artist intended for as long as possible. Another thing that's interesting is a lot of the artists, because they make the palettes, you know, for the deadline, they haven't had the time to varnish them, what they need to do to really make them last a long time. Several artists have asked us to hang it on the tree for one season, give it to them, so they can varnish it, let it dry, and then it's ready for the following season. Because some of these things do take. We actually got one year that was still wet. The paint was so thick that we had to handle it with care. Now, it would still be wet, but we got it on the tree and in position and high enough that nobody would touch it so that the oil paint eventually will dry. It's always an adventure.
I think it was kind of a conceptual mountain scene. It was the peak of the mountain. They had built up with layers of paint, the different shades of gray. And when they got to that white peak, the snowy peak, it was just pure wet oil paint.
Several inches thick. Probably dry, not on the tree, but in the box in January, February, March, the following year. Okay. We think it's dry now, though.
Yeah.
Several years. So we think it's dry now.
It could start creeping down the tree a little bit each year.
Yeah, that one's getting a little lower each year.
We tell people not to touch them anyway, but they come out with a white finger.
We know.
They were busted.
I think a lot of times when we go to hang, we look at the fragility of the palettes. I mean, some of them are two-dimensional, strictly paint on a palette. And then we have the three-dimensional ones, the Guy Wolf pot that has, you know, these three-dimensional, each pot is adhered to the palette separately. And then we have some made out of ceramic. We have some with these really lush ostrich feathers that just beg to be kind of pet. So we do try to keep that in mind, knowing that it's an event that a lot of families come to, and that we want to encourage young children to really spend the time and to look and immerse themselves in these trees. But we also don't want to taunt them with these little delectable three-dimensional objects right at the base of the tree.
Yeah, so it does play into it. You know, it is a museum, though, and they could easily touch the things on the wall as well. Mm-hmm. So we do have big signs asking, reminding folks not to touch. And, you know, there's enough staff wandering through that we do keep an eye on it. We'll have four trees this season. We have three previously, but earlier years where we had so many, we hung them so high that we had to give out binoculars so that people could see them. Those we never worried about because those were very far away from where human hands could touch. But now we're trying better to have them almost mostly all at eye level, where you look down or look up, but you don't have to strain your neck to see them. It's a challenge, but it's always a fun challenge.
I think the sweet spot is around 70.
Yeah, we did. So, you know, one year we went up to about 70 per tree, and it was getting a little tight. And we knew the next year to go to a whole other tree, that means then we're going to go down to like 40. We had to kind of do the math because we didn't want them to seem skimpy. They were very full last year. So I think with four this year and doing slightly larger additional ornaments, the tree should really be, nothing will seem skimpy. That should seem like a beautiful presentation, but still room for next year and the year after.
how do you theme them each year? Who gets to decide?
We never like the trees to look the same. Very often before we decorate the trees, we put tables around each of the trees, and Matt and I kind of decide on which types of palettes and subjects are going on each one. Mm-hmm. And then we just sort, but we come up with a new sub theme each year. But Matt kind of comes up with the colorways and the themes. And I think he's got some interesting ideas for this year.
Definitely. It's interesting for us. We have been doing this for so many years now. Both mm-hmm. Dave and I obviously have been here since the inception of the palette okay. trees. We see these each year, but we look at them every year with fresh eyes. It's mm-hmm. kind of like Christmas morning when we're unpacking them and like, oh my gosh, like look at this. Remember, it's so exciting. And sometimes I hate to use the word you forget about mm-hmm. a palette, but it's one that, you know, might not have been in such a prominent location last mm-hmm. year. And so you see it and you're like, wow, gosh, I forgot that this one was here. Let's really try to build something around this one. So mm-hmm. it gets to be organic. I think, you know, as we're bringing them out, the themes almost find us where okay. we're like, oh, there's a group of palettes that look like artist palettes where they put the deliberate color wave on it, or there are a group of palettes with the Griswold House featured on it mm-hmm. or there are ones that are strictly Christmas themed and we'll kind of group those together, and that's how we kind of decide.
And then the other challenge is when we hang them, because some are horizontal, some of them are vertical, some of them are in between, you know, not wanting to set up any kind of a rhythm on the tree that looks like, you know, stripe. We have to mix and match them so that they play visually nice on the tree. Right. The Christmas trees are artificial, but the branches are never exactly where you need them to be, right? So there's a lot of bending up and bending down, because it's almost like laying out paintings on a wall, mm-hmm. but we're laying out palette-shaped paintings on a giant cone. By the time we walk away, we feel like they look beautiful and they look balanced. I don't think it's as effortless as it actually looked. We try our best not to let them see us sweat.
And do you close the galleries down while you're doing this?
We do the setup of the actual bare tree mm-hmm. on Monday when we're closed to the public. So okay. they're pre-fluffed, they're pre-lit, the tables are set up so that on Tuesday morning, David and I come in bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and we say, all right, today is the day. We lay out the palettes and we're open to the public. We use this as an opportunity to educate the public as we're decorating. A lot of times we'll have folks that come in and say, what are these? Are these for sale? Is this a fundraiser? So
is this the Christmas bazaar? No.
Yeah.
No.
So it's a great opportunity for us to talk to visitors. We're a little more quiet in November. Folks are waiting to visit until the magic of Christmas officially opens. We usually do set up the week of Thanksgiving or the week just prior to. And a lot of folks have so many other things on their plates that the last thing that they're thinking about doing is, you know, taking a leisurely stroll through the galleries. So we tend to not be too busy. So we're able to really focus a lot, but we are open to the public in theory.
But we put out a sign explaining what we're doing, and you know, a lot of folks love seeing art or exhibitions being made. It's almost like a behind the scenes. With the palettes on the tables, it doesn't look like a construction site. It just looks like something exciting's happening. Mm-hmm. And you can tell that people really kind of enjoy the special pre-look that they get. We ask those people to come back to see the magic when it's done.
Do you have people returning year after year?
We really do see it become a tradition where multiple generations come in year after year and kind of share in what we call the magic of Christmas. I can say personally, there's one family I can think of immediately where I saw them come in when their children were toddlers, and now they're off to college. I've gotten to know this family through mm-hmm. the tradition of them coming in and taking their Christmas card photo, and that feels so special to me, and mm-hmm. it really kind of embodies the whole spirit of Christmas and the concept of, you know, the community coming together at an art museum in particular. It's just, it's wonderful to see that reaction.
And that was kind of the impetus for the book, because these same families that come back every year and they try to remember which ones have they seen before, which ones are new. And because they're so attached to these palettes and this tradition, they come out and say, you know, has the museum ever thought about doing a book or doing some kind of a publication? Because we would buy one because we just love this so much. And, you know, we realized early on, because it's an ongoing growing collection, that, you know, how do you do a book when it's still growing? But we thought the, you know, the 16th year was a good measure. And also when we finally got over 200 palettes, we thought, well, we'll at least do the first book. not saying a series is coming, but at least the book is now officially done. And but there are more palettes that are still being made. So it's a moment in time.
Each palette has its own page and just has the basic tombstone information underneath it. It has been met with great joy.
They're selling. I mean, one of our challenges is that several of the artists, not requested by us, but they would paint on both sides. The palettes have two sides, a front and a back. And during the Christmas season, we didn't do anything special with those. We just hung one side facing out, one side hiding in, which is kind of interesting because one of the panels up in our boarding house is double-sided and the artists themselves turn the one to face the wall. And so there's always at least one hidden. So our hidden palettes make sense. And we try our best to remember which one was facing out each year. With the book, those double-sided ones got both of their, both sides pictured and shown. So A, it's good for their record keeping that the artist has both of their donations represented. But also during the show years, when one side is facing and people are dying to know the other side, the book is a great opportunity. But then,
did you re-photograph all of the palettes?
We did. That was an intense couple of days, I must say. We hired a professional photographer who we work with quite frequently. Having to photograph 200 plus objects in a matter of 2 days, each one requiring different light setup, some of them having reflective surfaces, some being three-dimensional, some being two-dimensional, some being two-sided. The photographer himself deserves an award because he put up with a lot those 2 days. It was well worth it. Oh my goodness. When he started to send some of the images my way, just seeing the crispness, the clarity, it was amazing to know that we now have archival records of these palettes that are so true to life. That is just a great, you know, side effect of the book project. It just allows the palette project to live on forever. And also we can use those photos in other manners other than just this book. But there was a lot went into the actual design aspect of the book. And one thing that I love about it is the spiral bound binding, because when we were designing it, we realized if each palette was going to have its own page, we were going to have over 200 pages to this book, not including an index, not including a foreword, not including the covers. So we knew it was going to be a thick book. Working for a museum, and we're all about preservation, the last thing I wanted someone to do was buy a brand new book and have to break the binding so that on page 86, they could see their favorite palette. Having a spiral bound book, you're able to lay it completely flat. It was a very conscious design decision to go with the spiral bound.
So I do have to ask this because it's completely unfair. Do you have a favorite palette or set of palettes that you look forward to opening every year?
Well, I'll let Matt tell you, but first I have to say that both Matt and I are artists on the tree.
Yes.
That took a little soul searching, like, is that appropriate? Is that appropriate? So we can't save those. If those are our favorite, those get, we won't mention our own palettes, but you'd love to say they're like your children and you love all of them the same. What is amazing though, is I do have some favorites and I have some least favorites, but I've also had folks show me or point at something that I might not like as much. And they'll say, oh my gosh, that's my favorite. So I realize that it really is up to people's personal opinion. And some of the ones that you think, really, I don't know. People say, oh my gosh, I look forward to seeing that one every year. So go figure.
Definitely. If I had to choose, I would say some of my favorites are...
You gonna pick mine?
I don't know. The Christmas-themed ones are always something special for me because being the designer that helped design the trees, I look at them as part of a Christmas display. So for me personally, it's linked directly to Christmas. And I love the angels in particular. I just think putting an angel on a tree is so quintessential, you know, New England Christmas. And that to me is always a special part, bringing the angels out of the boxes and putting them on the tree. So that's something I look forward to every year.
If I had to pick one, early on there was a trompe l'oeil palette that really fools your eye. It's looks like an old palette made out of old wood with the paint on it, and then some snowflakes cut out of paper and then hanging on them by thread. Well, the artist lives pretty far away, and I didn't want to burden them by having to come all the way to the museum. So I actually met the artist in a Home Depot parking lot one night, halfway between the museum and their studio. And I was very gracious and thanked them, but I really thought I was looking at a crafty palette that you just cut out some snowflakes and stuck it on there. Because in the light of the Home Depot, it really looked like just a palette with some decoupage snowflakes. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I got back to the museum in good light that I saw that every aspect of that, the paper snowflakes, the thread, and even the aged wood was all painted by him. It's really kind of a masterful piece. That one's always been kind of near and dear because, you know, he didn't hesitate to say yes to the museum when I asked if he would consider doing a palette for us. I think that just shows not only their eagerness to share their own work, but in their universe, the museum seems to be a very special place, and they can acknowledge that by this kind of wonderful donation of a little bit of themselves.
Thank you so much.
Well, you're also doing us a favor because talking about the book, talking about the new palettes is getting us revved up for our 17th year of decorating Miss Florence's palette trees.
Thank you for listening to today's show. If you would like more information, check out our podcast show notes at www.ncptt.nps.gov. Until next time, goodbye, everybody.